Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome you to the Tuesday edition. Great to have you with us, and we roll on today. Tony Knopf, CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, tomorrow on the business side of sports. Kevin and I have a lot to deal with in the last half hour of the show, but let's bring in John Rocker, the former Major League closer for the Atlanta Braves, doing a lot of important work with homeless veterans. We bring in John now. Tonight, John, we work our way to Williamsport for the home opener for the Cutters and Spikes tonight. You've been down this road before. What is this like for a young player, especially one that goes from college to suddenly playing as a professional?
Wide-eyed, cock-eyed optimism. Obviously, those kids, some of them have been through a bit of a grueling spring training and an extended spring program. But they're extremely happy to get out, start sleeping in again. They're not have to, be at the yard at 7:30 in the morning and go through a 3 or 4 hour workout in the hot Florida sun just to play a 1 o'clock game with 7 fans in the stands. So they're happy to actually get out and experience what professional baseball is really about, which is the same schedule, playing in a in front of under the lights in front of several thousand fans tonight. So a lot of those kids, they're just happy to, be moving on and getting the extended spring behind them. Like I said, when those college draft picks show up, they're going to be, wide-eyed, cock-eyed optimists. Like I said before, here's the beginning of my pro career. I'm going to make my charge to the big league. So they're all excited and full of life and, a lot of extra bounce in their step. So it's nice to see those young kids. Most of them are, 19, 20 years old, maybe 21, and they're just optimistic as heck to get as many games under their belt and get over the big leagues.
John, one thing I've noticed, though, in talking to players at this level over the years that I've worked in it, and, whether I've worked Penn State football, basketball, or now doing this, obviously, is that I've discovered that, you talk about that cocky, wide-eyed optimism, yet I notice there's a fragility. Like it's a pitch-by-pitch, at-bat-by-at-bat. Did you at any point experience that, or were you around guys that experienced that at this level?
Yeah, because if you sort of think about it too much, and it doesn't take very long to get into it, especially for the young kids, and you realize that the level of competition, you realize that, any night or any week that I falter, I may put myself behind the eight ball, someone else jumps in front of me, on the depth chart or something like that. And so some guys, tend to pucker up a little too much, tend to hold on too tight, and they realize that what a misstep or a trip step, getting tripped up a little bit, when you've got just that intense competition with, the influx of Asian players, obviously Latin American players come from all over the globe, great players, here homegrown, the competition for catching spots, outfield spots, bullpen spots, starting roster spots is absolutely intense. And if you falter there, someone quickly and rapidly looking to move in and take your place. The coaching staff has got their thumb on it. The upper management, all of the front office, they've got their thumb on it. Way down to the New York Penn League, which is a short season league, all the way up to AAA guys, who we're going to call up next. And it's an intense level of competition. It lasts 300 days out of the year, from being in shape and not getting hurt to playing well once you get on the field. And some kids, if you realize that too early, you can play with a little bit of a stiff nature. I know there was a great quote in Bull Durham that says life is made for those who are cursed with self-awareness. And a lot of those kids, if they become self-aware a little too soon, is the magnitude of their reality and really what it takes and the long, long ladder that you got to climb to finally get to the big leagues. Yeah, they can play a little stiff and the ultimate realization of what they're trying to pull off and how difficult it really is.
You wrote the book Scars and Strikes. How important was it for you personally to put that onto paper?
It was a nice little come to Jesus for myself. I would not recommend writing a book. It's a long, arduous process, and I didn't go the route that so many go, doing the interviews and having someone else, put the pen in their hand or write on my behalf. I actually sat down over about a 14-month period of time on my computer and pounded it out. I wrote probably 98, 99% of that book, literally sitting down 4 or 5 hours a day, for 14 months and put that thing together. But at the end of it, you really learn a lot about yourself. And you know, there's certain things, a lot of things out there that are gross misconceptions about myself and about my past and things like that. And it was a nice little cleansing process to, just really kind of, you know, sit down, quiet time for hours a day, months on end, to really realize what kind of person that I am. But also just to, you know, finally in my mind, clear the air. These words are out of the horse, or I guess as some folks would say, out of the jackass's mouth. They don't need to be disputed. Here are my thoughts. Here are my feelings. Here is how my life has been, my lifestyle, my acquaintances, my close friends, the whole nine yards. You can't really dispute, when someone sits down and writes an autobiography like that. It was a nice effort just to sort of cleanse the playing field, and then, you know, a nice little soul-searching project as well.
How difficult is it when you're in the fishbowl and people assume things or think they know you or draw conclusions from point A to point B? How difficult is that while still trying to be a professional out there?
You know, I had to, you know, it bothered me probably for the first, you know, 6 months to a year. There's obviously no way to please everybody. I don't care. Derek Jeter, as great as he's been for his entire career, he still has his critics, you know, somehow, some way, shape, or form. Obviously, you're never going to make everybody happy. Some of the people all the time, all the people some of the time, but never all the people all the time. And I finally just got tired of chasing my tail and trying to, you know, appease and pacify and always say the right thing and whatever. I finally realized that there's about 10 people in my life that I actually care what you think about me. There's a great, 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 great chance that whomever I'm talking to, receiving criticism from, you're not one of those 10 people. So as long as the 10 people, my family, my close friends, as long as those 10 people, they have a positive opinion of me, they're not criticizing me and critiquing me, then I'm fine. I'm fine with who I am. I can wake up in the morning, look myself in the mirror, and be okay with the kind of life I'm living. You've got to take that mentality, take the top 5 or 10 or however many people in your life it may be. I truly value my mother's opinion of me. If she's got a problem with me, maybe I need to look at myself. If some reporter in wherever has got a problem with me, you know what, does it really affect my life? No. Okay, I don't care.
Did it affect how you trust?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I've learned a long time ago, and this is basically why I was still playing. To take a page out of Tom Glavine's book. I know Tom, dear friend, love Tom. But he is probably the most boring interview that maybe has ever existed. He's the coach for the Spurs. I think he probably gives a better interview than Tom does.
But
Tom, I think, learned that. Just be as vanilla as you can. Don't give anybody anything to hang on to and spin or whatever else. And while I was playing, I rationally understand that. And that was sort of the way I went through things for 7, 8, 9 years. And I remember about probably 5 years ago, it was right after I retired, about 5 years ago, I was doing the Hannity and Combs show. And I went on with the same mentality, tiptoe, don't say the wrong thing, fit through that little tiny keyhole of political correctness and whatever else. And it really made for a really nerve-wracking time, especially when we have a big national show, especially a national TV show like the Hannity and Combs. And I remember riding back in the car with my publicist after the show. I'm like, you know, I just realized something. I'm not playing anymore. I have no one to be beholden to. I'm retired. I don't really have a job. I piddle in a few things here and there. I don't really have a job. You can't get me. You can't fire me. You can't sanction me. You can't. What am I so scared of now? So the stuff that I was so scared and whatnot to wear on my sleeve back when I was playing for fear of, you know, obviously got teammates to answer to, a manager to answer to, front office to answer to, a GM like Ted Turner to answer to, all that kind of stuff, all that had gone away. I basically answered to, you know, myself. And so I wear things a little bit more on my sleeve now. I don't really tiptoe through interviews like I do or like I did back then. And they don't make me nearly as nervous when I'm talking. They don't make me nervous beforehand that, oh, my God, what's going to be the gotcha question today? That didn't really affect me anymore. But yes, back when I was playing and I would have to hear it from a teammate or fans in the stands or maybe even the GM would come down and say, Donna, our interview on ESPN today, I didn't really appreciate some of your answers, knowing that was a possibility. I used to really tread lightly in every interview, and quite frankly, be terrified during most of them.
There, I covered the U.S. Open over the weekend and did some shows down at the U.S. Open. There was one point where I was around Phil Mickelson, and look, for the most part, 90-plus percent are, hey, we love you, Phil. Go get him, Phil. Come on, Phil. And you see him tip his cap to the fans as he walks along. But there's one guy who was standing next to me. He goes, Wingfoot, Phil, Wingfoot. You know, and, of course, it's loud enough for him to obviously hear. How tough was it for you to deal with, I don't care what tiny percentage it was, but that someone would take shots at you that was never walked a second in your shoes?
Yeah, well, you know, after a while, you know, when you're a minor league player and you're, like I said, 19, 20 years old, your skin's not that thick yet. You take some of that stuff personally. By the time you're, you know, the age of Phil Mickelson, 43 years old, you know, future golf Hall of Famer, the whole nine yards, his skin is so thick by now that that stuff will go in one ear, out the other, if it's even heard at all. Same thing with a big league ball player. You know, when you got 50,000 people surrounding you every night, especially when you're in a bullpen and people are hanging right over the top of you, you hear it and you hear it and you hear it and you hear it. And you just want to look at them and be like, do you think I've never heard this before? You think you're the first, really? You know, and just, they really think they can get to you and things like that. But honestly, by the time you've gotten to the point, playing in the big leagues, it's not so much. Well, it's really parallel in two angles. It's parallel from a physical maturation process, but just as much as parallel on a mental maturation process. That whole stint you run through the minor leagues, from the bus rides to the unruly fans on Thursday, where it's 50-cent beer night and stuff like that, you can imagine the kind of crowd that brings out. By the time that you get to the big leagues and you're in Yankee Stadium, there's nothing you hadn't heard, and you know your skin is so calloused. If you even hear it, it just goes in one ear and out the other.
You obviously have wanted to do something important with your life beyond just being a major league pitcher. You've taken your name and you've attached it to homeless veterans. Why did you pick that group to throw your energy behind?
Actually, I didn't pick the group. I started the group. I'm one of the co-founders of that group.
Yeah,
it's called
Save Homeless Veterans.
Our website
the cause,
is savehomelessveterans.org.
You picked the cause, though.
What's that?
I said, you picked the cause, though. You picked what you wanted
to
do.
Yeah, you're right. It's, you know, just from – I was working with a dear friend of mine by the name of Rocky King. Rocky moved down to Atlanta at the age of 19 years old, was homeless for 3 years. The reason Rocky moved down here was back in, like, 1989, 1990, something like that. He wanted to be a professional wrestler. And he moved from Columbia, South Carolina, was homeless for 3 years. Long story short, he ends up wrestling with WCW for 20 years, makes a pile of money, retires when he's about 50 or so, something like that. I met Rocky through my dear friend Otis Dixon. God bless Otis. Started working with Rocky and some of his charity benefits, because all Rocky does now is charity benefits, feeds the homeless, things like that, because Rocky was homeless when he moved here, and he, you know, boy done good. He did very well for himself, which is all he does. So I'm helping Rocky with a charity benefit about this time last year, and he starts telling me about something I had no idea about the homeless veteran situation in Atlanta. I'm like, Rocky, I've never thought about it, never knew it was such a burden on our community. And he starts telling me the numbers. I'm like, well, we got to do something about this. I mean, just from folks that don't know the stats, just in Atlanta, Georgia, which our group's based out of Atlanta for right now, I would love to move across the southeast and hopefully take this thing national. There's 2,600 homeless veterans that the VA knows about. There's probably about 4,000 to 5,000 in reality. And nationwide, 300,000 men and women who fought in our stead, shed blood for this country in a lot of cases, go to bed every night with not a proper roof over their head, have no idea where their next meal's coming, have no idea where they're sleeping the next day. 300,000. And when I was told that, and I did a few events with Rocky, I saw that the impact he was making on the homeless, and he was actually in part transitioning some of the stuff he was doing for the general homeless population to a passion that he was having for the homeless veterans. I'm like, Rock, we got to start our own gig. And, you know, from my influence in Atlanta, the people I know that I brought in, put them on the board, and just through, you know, doors that I've been able to open and connections I have over the last year, this organization's only about a year old, have made some tremendous strides. We've got a meeting with the governor, Nathan Deal, in about 2 weeks. We're less than a year old and already have a meeting with the governor. You know, they'll do some tremendous things. And, you know, you look at these poor men and women, I can tell you so many stories, and they're looking for just a helping hand. They're down on their luck. I can't tell you all you know, to just sob stories I've heard from, just over and over again. A lot of it comes from chemical dependency. It comes from psychiatric issues. And they're looking into the abyss for a helping hand to be like, I fought for this country, and now this country's left me flat on my backside. Somebody help. Well, my organization is the one here in Atlanta that's going to help. We are helping right now.
We're a former Major League pitcher, John Rocker. Tell us a little bit about Vietnam Vet, the guy that left Nam in 71. Sergeant York wrote us. So what is it? What's his story and why he's so proud of it?
York wrote us, man. He's sort of the grandpa of the organization. I hope this doesn't get back to York, because I love the guy to death. Boy, he's got about two marbles rolling around. He's really incapable of working. York's the kind of guy, he'll take his shoes off and 30 seconds later can't remember where he put them. York will be with us as long as he wants to. We give York money. We pay for pretty much all his stuff. He stays in one of our houses and we don't ask a thing of York. But just a tremendous man. I just met York. He came to the program, I believe, in January. And the way he got to us, he's a 67, 68. Like I said, 1971, came out of Vietnam. A friend of mine knew about our program, called me up. It's like, do you have any more space left in one of your homes? Like, yeah, we did. Calls me up. He's like, well, I've got a friend of mine. His name's York, Vietnam vet, never had the first VA benefit in his entire life. He just called me up. I hadn't talked to him in 6 months. So he's getting ready to get kicked out of his pay-by-the-week motel over off Cobb Parkway. Like, really? I'm like, you know what? I'll have one of my guys over there within the hour to get him. And sure enough, he was literally standing out on the sidewalk with a suitcase in hand at one of those just one-story pay-by-the-week motels in a bad part of town. Hadn't paid in 2 weeks. And I said, by 2 o'clock today, you got to go. And he's been with us ever since. The homes I provide for these guys are homes that I personally would have no problem living in. They're four-bedroom, three-bath homes, three-bedroom, two-bath homes. The one York currently lives in, 10-foot ceilings, hardwood floors, granite countertops, brand-new appliances. I mean, I make these homes nice for these guys. That's what they deserve. In the meantime, when they're in the program, we're affiliated with Roswell Street Baptist Church. My dear friend, Dr. Ernest Easley, who also happens to be the executive chairman of the Southern Baptist Convention, is a senior pastor there. We get them all their counseling, all their psychiatric needs through a set of PhD counselors that actually attend Roswell Street. Because most of the way these guys become homeless, they're loaded up by the VA on pain pills and Lord knows what else. They have alcohol issues and things like that. That's one main reason they become homeless. They have massive, post-traumatic stress disorder, schizophrenia, paranoia, things like that. That's another way they become homeless. When they come in our program and they're staying at one of our homes, we put them with a counselor for about a 12 to 14-month program that starts working with their alcohol issues, starts working with their drug issues, starts trying to, weed them off of that so they can get back in society, hold down a proper job, and get back to living the quality of life they deserve. So it's a really comprehensive program. We have a great component of job placement, have a great component of financial education. There's a gentleman by the name of Ryan Mack, who started the Optimum Financial Institute. Ryan's a Wall Street guy, financial manager. He's on CNN as a financial analyst probably once every 2 weeks. Ryan started a 501c3 called the Optimum Financial Institute. It teaches fiscal literacy. It teaches these guys how to repair their credit, how to start a savings account, how to budget their money on a monthly basis, how to properly fill out a job application, how to balance a checkbook, just basic things that a lot of them have never been taught. And, it's a really comprehensive program. Take them off the street. Counsel them with their psychiatric or chemical dependency needs, get them a job when they start making money, teach them how to spend their money wisely and save their money, and hopefully within 12, 14 months, send them back out. They can get their own apartment, their own house, and go on and live a good, happy, quality life.
People need at times a helping hand to get them back on track, which is what this is doing. Give me the importance, John, of pro bono work to help out your organization and also private sector solutions.
This is all private sector. People have come to me and said, "Do you want any grants to the VA? Any grants from other branches of government?" I'm like, absolutely not. I want to do everything private sector. I've been a private sector guy since I retired. And I promise you, my private sector solutions are a lot better than government bureaucracy solutions. I saw a story last week on Fox Business when a man or woman who's a veteran goes to the VA and applies for benefits, whether it be medical, whether it be dental, whether it be financial, whatever, average of 500 days to process their claim. So even when you come into my program, we've got, nice donation dollars, things like that. Most of these men and women that come in the program, they don't have a dime to their name. They don't have a quarter in their pocket. How are they going to buy food for themselves, groceries, toothbrush? I mean, just your basic living supplies. We will will actually give you money to go to the grocery store. We'll give you money to go buy some new shoes if you need it. If you do have a car and got money to put gas in, we'll give you money to put gas in your car. I mean, just really take care of these men and women until we can get their benefits reinstated, until we can get them a job and start making their own money and provide for themselves. And that's where a lot of these donation dollars are coming from. And so far, in the first really 8 to 10 months, we've really been pounding the pavement and seeking these donations. People have been more than willing to you know, open up their pockets and their pocketbook and help out these guys, and it's really making a tremendous difference.
If someone would like to make a donation as they listen to us across the central part of this state, how can they get involved?
SaveHomelessVeterans.org. We've got two tabs. One to make a donation. There's another that's called Sponsor a Soldier. You can actually commit $20 a week, $50 a week, whatever, that goes to a specific soldier that helps that man or woman buy hygienic products. Like I said, buy food, things like that. And so we've got two different tabs that you can do that. Everything is done through a PayPal. You can use a credit card and stuff like that. There's an address there that you can mail mail checks directly to the organization, made out to Save Homeless Veterans, Inc. But that's a great way. I mean, all the money, I of course don't take any money out of this thing, and neither does anybody else. The support of it's just going to provide a nice support level and support staff to get these men and women off the streets, rehabilitate their lives, and get them back on the road to living the happy life they deserve to be living.
Remember the part of the interview where we talked about people don't really know you? I think people know you a lot better now in this part of the country. John Rocker, thank you so much for your valuable time. We appreciate it very much, and whatever we can do to help, let us know.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and hopefully I'll be bringing Save Homeless Veterans to your area maybe in the next couple of years. Who knows? That's certainly my goal, is to take this thing nationwide.
John, thanks so much. John Rocker, former Major League closer. I hope you had a chance to know him a little bit better as we come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For a quality pre-owned vehicle, well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on Pre-Auction Blowout.
Your dream car, a 2010 Ford Roush Mustang 427R, just $33.99. And get ready for these deals. On a 2008 Honda Fit HB Mansport, a 2011 Ford Escape four-wheel drive XLT, a 2010 Chevy Traverse four-wheel drive four-door LT, a 2012 Ford Econoline Wagon, 2011 Chevy Equinox, and a four-door 2010 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited four-wheel drive Sahara, and a 2012 Ford F-150 four-wheel drive Super Crew 145 Raptor feels so good that you have to call for our lowest price promise. 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. As we roll through this Tuesday, we are 4 minutes away from the Kevin Herr rant of the day. It will be a beauty.
I didn't even share with you what it's about today.
I wasn't interested. No. I can't wait. I assume it deals with an engine and wheels.
No, absolutely doesn't. There's no engine or wheels on this one.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing.
This update from Major League Baseball, Kevin Youkilis will miss 10 to 12 weeks with back surgery.
You have a little trouble over at that spot, aren't they?
And Teixeira for the Yankees on the 15-day DL with a wrist issue.
But this is a case where the Yankees have been able to find people within their minor league system to really help them hang in there. But this is age. Teixeira's older now. A-Rod's older now. Youkilis is older now. Jeter's older now. You saw last year Rivera miss, you know, and you talked about him shagging fly balls, but that was a product of age. You know, there's only so many, you know, so much in that ACL to begin with. I mean, it's a product of age, and that's what we're seeing. A team, you know, Granderson's missed time, older now. Now, they've been able to fill in. I mean, Robinson Cano, you think of Robinson Cano as a young guy, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
He's 30.
Well, for the Yankees, he's a young guy.
Yeah, but he's 30.
On most teams, he'd be, you know, he'd be the veteran.
He'd be the vet, yeah.
He's 30 years old. You know, I mean, to their credit, they have found good starting pitching. But as I told you, as well as how highly I think of Andy Pettit as a pitcher. I've mentioned Hall of Fame credentials before. Because we're never going to have a 300-game winner again. This guy's at 250-plus now. Plus 19 postseason wins. But I found it disturbing for the Yankees that they were really banking on signing him to come back. When you're talking about banking on somebody who's 40 years plus to come back because you think he's that important to what you want to do in the major leagues, that's a scary sign about where you are as a franchise and as a club. And they're, you know, what they have now is a product of an aging team. Teixeira out. Jeter out. A-Rod out. Euculus out. Granderson has been out. They have had enough young talent. It's made a big difference. You know, that's allowed them to hang in. So, all right, time now for your rant. Rant away.
Well, this is going to be a simple one. It actually has to do with a track athlete and bobsledding. What do those have in common? Lolo Jones. Lolo has been doing some things with the U.S. bobsled team and received a check for 7 months' work of $741.84. Now, keep in mind, when it comes to track and field, she's probably one of the top, you know, outside track and field money getters, you know, when it comes to sponsorships and so forth. She's got a lot of money coming in. So $741 is no big deal if that's all she made. She's going to be able to live. But she makes a video saying 7 months with the bobsled team for a whole season and then holds up the check. And she also made comment that she's going to be a little bit late with her rent this month. Now, again, this is coming from somebody who has a lot of sponsor money coming in. And guys like Stephen Holcomb, who is a gold medalist for the bobsleds, came in and said, you know, you don't get it. You made $741. That's more than most athletes in a sport like this. So why are you even complaining in the first place? A lot of these athletes don't make any money at all. And you're getting tons of sponsorship money. And then you complain about a $741 check. He's got a point.
Yes, he does.
He's got a really good point.
Yes, he does.
And then she came back with, well, I didn't want to offend anybody. I just wanted to help out my bobsled teammates. Some of them are in debt because they've given their life to the sport. Her partner had to raise money. She and her partner actually had to raise money for the bobsled team to finish the season because the U.S. only funds two of the three sleds. And then commented that she can't imagine halfway through my track season having to stop and raise money to finish. Well, if that's what your intent was, then say that. Don't post a video that sarcastically talks about a check for $741.84 and not think that people are going to be ticked off about that.
Well, we know, I mean, let's face it, we know that in today's social media has its pluses, and to me, social media has tremendous minuses, as you know, and I've outlined it before.
Sure.
And we, you know, we use social media on this show. Kevin uses Twitter and Facebook and so forth to get word out about the show. And that's an effective way to do that. That is an effective, everyday way for us to do that. So obviously, I'm four square behind that. But the number of people that really are irresponsible as to how they use social media, that's an irresponsible way of using it. If you had a message to get out there, get your message out there. Tell us why. Here's a check for $741. You know, I've been more fortunate than others in Olympic sports, but my bobsled teammates are not. Whatever you can do to help us, this is all we got for working an entire season, and we were lucky to stay on board. If you can help us to get to Sochi, please. That's fine. That's how you go about it. Humble yourself a little bit.
There was not much humbling in that.
Well, but she's never... One of the problems that she's had as an athlete is that she has not presented herself as being humble.
She never has. That's why she's never been a popular figure among her teammates on track and field. She's never been popular among her teammates in track and field. It's well known. And this is the reason why, because too much of the time is spent by Lolo Jones talking about Lolo Jones.
And usually in the third person.
Right. And here's another case where it appears she's presented herself the same way, and then again has to backtrack. She spent too much. When somebody has to spend so much time in their life backtracking, that tells you they make a series of mistakes and they haven't learned their lessons.
Well, here's the part that I didn't mention that I thought was the funniest part of all. You remember that I had commented on what she intended to say. Well, she released that statement through Red Bull, which is one of her sponsors.
Right.
I'm sorry, but if I'm a member of the U.S. bobsled skeleton team, that's a slap in the face as well.
Why?
Because you're doing it through one of your sponsors. Well, why didn't you use that sponsor to help out your bobsled and skeleton federation teammates? You mean to tell me Lolo has no influence with Red Bull?
Don't know.
You know, if you're going to make the statement, release it on your own. Don't release it through one of your sponsors. That's just silly.
Right. Yep, I understand that. I understand that.
Thus endeth the rant.
It's a good rant. Good rant. I like that. You spend most of your time during Lawrence's show thinking about the rant?
No, it just kind of comes to me.
Really? Now, how far away are we from the Olympics right now?
You know, I haven't counted it down. I know that shocks you.
Are you excited about the on-tape Russian Olympics?
That's the one thing that does disappoint me. That's the one thing that does disappoint me is the fact that there will be a lot of things on tape delay. Although, with all the channels that the networks has, it shouldn't be on tape delay unless they want something in prime time.
Of course not. Look, we're in the 21st century now. All right? You have to show it live. Now, if you want to then put together a 3-hour, 8 to 11 show in prime time that includes all these elements that people can't see during the day, fine. But, look, let's face it. During the Olympic Games, and we're not going to do this out of spite, but we have an obligation to our audience to tell them what's going on. All right, I can update scores for you, all right? Am I ruining it for everybody that the Red Sox and Tampa Bay are delayed and it's 4-1 at Fenway, or that the Mets already won today 4-3 over Atlanta?
I'm going to watch it.
Right. I mean, the Mets already won today over Atlanta 4-3. Now you'll see highlights tonight on SportsCenter or something. The Clippers have walked away from the Celtics deal. Yeah, you know, Westbrook is off his crutches, says he's back for Oklahoma City. Marian Hossa says he's going to play game 4 for the Blackhawks. Have I ruined it for everybody tonight by saying that? But by telling you who won medals at the Olympic Games, you know, you pour all this money into it. Show it live. And then if you want to package a 3-hour show at night from 8 to 11, there's so many people that are working during the course of the day that can't watch it. My only advice would be to them is to put it over the air TV and don't put it online. You know, don't show it live online.
And just if you are counting down, it's 233 days, 3 hours, 12 minutes, and 10 seconds.
There'll be an NBA game out or something, college game.
Oh, I may have to throw that little countdown widget on our website, stevejonesshow.com.
Why don't you count down to the Penn State football season first, okay?
All right, I will.
Let's do that, okay? We're 74 days away. Days of the start of the college football season, 74 days of Penn State. Okay, we do that first.
You know what I want to know is, what's your favorite time of year? And this is something we can open up the phone lines for at 800-795-9565. So the Hillshire's General Store hotline's open. What is your favorite sports time of year? Is it spring when baseball's getting underway and you get into the playoffs for the NHL and NBA? Is it at the end of the baseball season and football season starting, or is it something different? For me, it's absolutely 100% August.
August?
Uh-huh.
August.
August. August, September. I mean, not just August. I mean, August, September. Those two, as you cross over. You know, the baseball's starting to wind down, so you got pennant races heating up. You got a wild card to look at. Then you have the start of the NFL season, the college football season. Sometimes, every 4 years, the Summer Olympics is right around that time. I always liked August-September time period for sports.
August. August.
Yeah.
August.
Listen, every high school team thinks that they can win a state championship in August. Every college football team thinks that they can win a national championship in August. Every NFL team thinks they're going to the Super Bowl in August. And about half the baseball teams thinks there's still a chance for them to make the playoffs in August.
August.
Do I sense a slight disagreement there from you, Mr. Jones?
August.
Wow.
Now, does that mean February's terrible and January stinks? No.
February, you have your on-tape Russian Olympics.
Only next year. Now, I my second favorite would be the month of May.
May.
Which I've already discussed that before. I won't get into that, but yeah, May.
I had so many people comment to me about that. They're like, May? What the hell is he talking about? May?
Sorry.
And I said, it's because of the Indy 500 and NASCAR. And they went, well, does he watch sports? I go, yeah.
Yep. August, because of the start of football season. Baseball pennant races getting underway.
So you like a time of the year where nobody's done anything yet.
But there's optimism all over the place. Nothing beats the first. You know, I'm sorry. Maybe this is biased, but I love the first high school football game of the season.
I love opening day as well, but to me it's a process.
But it's the most optimistic day of the entire year. In football, especially with high school football. Well, college for that matter, too. I mean, you know, everybody's still in it.
You've already calculated the playoffs.
But everybody's still in it. That's the point.
You always jump ahead. You always jump ahead.
Instant gratification. I come from an instant generation.
But you always jump ahead. You're always like, okay, what's it going to be now in November? Like, just... let it take care of itself. Watching the process is fun.
Says the man that has done many bowl games in his career.
And the NCAAs.
Yeah. So, you know, you can't relate. So I don't even go there. You can't relate with that.
I don't think about it till the moment comes up. I never have.
Wait till we come back from break. I'll play you the song that I always play come end of August, early September.
You know, the idea is to keep the audience.
Oh, no. Everybody's waiting to hear what this is going to be.
Great. Let's take a break. That way we can lessen the anticipation.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I actually interviewed Andy Williams once. He was a very nice man. By the way, John Graham has decided to transfer from the Nittany Lion basketball program. I told you in March there would be three transfers from the Penn State basketball program. All three did come to fruition. I knew the names at the time. All three have done it. The one I didn't expect was Jermaine Marshall. Randy in Danville. Hi, Randy.
Hiya, Steve. Been listening to Kevin's rant for the last 10 minutes, and, you know, I was surprised about August as well. But what the best time of the year for me, and this isn't because this is your show, Steve, the best time for me is when the Penn State football season begins. I just love that time of the year.
Oh, we all do, and that's great when that comes up. You feel like you have 12 events during the course of the year, and I'm like you. It's very special.
But when does that happen this year, Steve? August. Thank you. Brother. I stand. The defense rests.
Thank you, Steve.
Randy, do you enjoy Penn State football in September, October, November as well?
When the game starts, it could be in January, it could be in May. I just love from the first game to the last game. And hearing you and Jack come on and the pregame and all that, it's just something I work around my house and barn during Saturdays, and I tune you guys in, and I just, the hours just fly by when I'm listening to you.
Randy, thanks so much. You're a witness.
Okay, guys.
Randy, thanks for making it more fun today. Appreciate it.
Starts in August.
And we enjoy September, October.
I did not say that
November,
I didn't enjoy any of those months.
Then we transition into them. Basketball, football, same time. Bowl games get started. Basketball's in gear. New Year's Day comes up. Basketball's in gear. We get to the NCAAs, and we get to Major League Baseball. Playoff time, Masters, U.S. Open. But you like August.
Football.
When nobody's doing anything.
Football.
You know why the NFL is wants to go to 18 regular season games?
Money.
Because they know August stinks.
August, everybody still has a chance.
Oh, listen to you.
And when you were a Steeler fan in the 80s, well, pretty much by mid-September, it was over.
You're a Phillies fan.
That was over in July.
Wow. You really are a depressed guy, aren't you?